No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of Rise Up, See Red. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, a USC Today affiliate covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, is also on the line. Seth, how is everything going this day, this Tuesday night?
Oh, it's good, Jess. Just busy, kind of getting through the start of tackle football for one of my kids and flag football for my other kids. So it'll be fun.
Yes, it is full on football season, not only just because we cover the NFL, but back at our homes. And my son's starting freshman football, your son's in the Pee Wee Leagues, and you're coaching that. So that and college football starts. So my Wednesdays, then Thursdays, Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays because of the NFL, and basically pretty much half my week is taken up by football. That never mind the fact that we do the podcast every week and we write a gazillion articles every day on our respective sites. So welcome to Rise Up, See Red. And we actually have some real football, well, quote unquote, real football to talk about, as the Cardinals had their first preseason game of this year, a 31-10 loss to the Oakland Raiders. Kind of the reaction is, oh, they lost a preseason game. We're going to go more into that. There's been a couple of things of news. So what we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to react to the preseason game. We're going to look ahead to the next game this weekend against the San Diego Chargers as they're on the road for game two. But a little bit, couple of things in terms of news have come out. And the first is the little bit of a worry. Cardinals had a little bit of scare. They're in San Diego practicing with the Chargers, the joint practice, which is becoming kind of a new thing around the league. The Cardinals have done it a couple times in years past, but it's kind of catching on around the league for a way to get some better practices. And the Cardinals this week will, Guns N' Roses being in concert at University of Phoenix Stadium on Monday, decided to have practice in San Diego, a couple of practices with the Chargers leading up to the preseason game. But the news came out just as practicing was started that Bruce Arians had to leave practice. He was experiencing some stomach pain. The medical personnel there on staff looked at him and decided send him to the hospital. So the news is right now he's staying overnight at a hospital in San Diego. The vibe seems to be that he's going to be okay. But as we probably both have written about, the Cardinals are quite familiar with things going south. And they had just a couple of years ago with Freddie Kitchens, their quarterback's coach, when he didn't look all that well. Medical staff looked at him, sent him to the hospital. It turned out that it was life-saving because of an defective aorta. And the surgery essentially saved his life. It doesn't appear to be anything serious like that. But obviously the players are concerned and fans should be concerned too, because, Bruce Arians is a big, important piece to this success puzzle that the Cardinals have.
Right. And it's one of those things that, you never want to guess, you never want to speculate. For those people that don't know that, I work in healthcare for like my real life job, and that's what I do for a living. And, I usually ask people and like dig and stuff. For instance, when Jonathan Cooper broke his leg, I tweeted out, and you and I had talked about it, that it was a lot more serious than everybody was trying to make it to be. And then what, like 2 days later, it came out, they put him on IR for the season, and everybody's like, well, I thought it wasn't that big of a deal. And I was like, well,
he's a 300-pound man on a broken leg.
Yeah.
Whose game is based on athleticism.
Right. And so, yeah, it was just one of those things. And so it's weird because it just sounds, like appendicitis, but again, you don't want to speculate. You don't want to do anything like that. But they also didn't say anything about surgery, so maybe it's not even appendicitis, because they would have been like, "Oh, it's appendicitis. We're taking him into surgery," because that's something that is, you know, common and you just take care of. There's a lot of other things that could have been then, so that's why, you know, from there you don't really kind of speculate on anything else outside of that.
And well, especially since it's not in town, we're not getting a lot of permission. And you know, these things being on the medical side of things, it's harder to get good information. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to the Arians family, as I'm sure that was a little bit of a scare. Anytime you get sent to the hospital is
it's not a fun thing, especially since he's out of town.
Especially because they have medical personnel. So they have doctors and physicians. They have team people there who are medical professionals. And they said, you probably ought to go to the hospital. So that's
right. That's never a fun thing. And that's, you know, it's one of those things like, and it's a different, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, belittle anything, but like, this time last year, my wife and I got a call. Our kids were with my parents heading to San Diego, and they got in a car accident, and their truck flipped on the highway. And, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, you know, you get, like you said, you get some information, but nobody's really giving you all the information. You're like, what's going on? You know, the kids and my mom were okay. My dad was taken in an ambulance, and we couldn't get a hold of anybody and stuff like that. So it's just more than anything, it's a stressful situation, and it creates, you know, it creates something that is, you don't, what's the word I'm looking at? It's a inconvenient, you know, interruption into your routine and your daily life. And that's, you know, what is the worst part of it. As long as obviously it's not anything serious. It's just, it creates this disruption of what you're used to and doing and building. And, you know, for a guy like Bruce Arians, who prides himself on, you know, the details and being ready, I'm sure this is just, you know, absolutely killing him, not being able to be out there at his first joint practice, you know, missing things, not being able to yell obscenities at players, you know, that it's probably just not, you know, something that he's enjoying right now.
Of course not. And, you know, there's not much else we can talk about with that other than the fact that it sounds like, at least in training camp, they're probably doing okay, because Harold Goodwin has been kind of running a lot more of the offense in the preseason. He's the one going to be calling plays again this week in San Diego. So it's not like they are, you know, unprepared for something like this, because Arians is actually doing a good job of coach developing. That's kind of one of the pluses to that. Some better news, some news that came out on, and it's as expected, the Arizona Cardinals, after heading out to San Diego, they made the decision to remove all the players they had on the physically unable to perform list. Zach Wagaman, they said goodbye to, you know, cut him a check for some injuries. Nope, not at all. But now Justin Bethel, Tyron Matthew, and Frosty Rucker are now no longer on that list and now are able to participate in team activities. But they're not going to return to practice right away. There's no rush there. They want to do that so at least that they can start getting the mental reps and participate in walkthroughs. It sounds like maybe Tyron Matthew may be back participating in some individual drills as early as next week. But it is, I mean, it's interesting with both Frosty Rucker and Justin Bethel that their return still is really unknown, as in, will either of them be ready for week one? And if that's the case, now I know Rucker, I know Arians isn't worried about Rucker, and he's an old guy. So I don't think the hitting in camp is necessarily something he worries about. But Bethel, though, we continue to talk about this topic, is how Bethel has really sort of played himself injured himself completely out of any role except for special teams again. Because as it is right now, I don't think he will see a sniff of defense if he doesn't get back in time, if he doesn't manage to get some contact, because once training camp closes, once they close camp at the end of next week, I think they're now down to just one padded practice a week.
Right. And the thing is with Bethel, and I wrote about this today, and I'm sure you did too, is, you know, even Rucker, like, now all of a sudden they're not starters now. You know, Rucker has a place in the rotation more than Bethel in terms of, you know, he's, like you said, he's a veteran. He's been there. He's done that. This was, you know, really the first time Bethel was going to be a starter and, like, a very trusted and important part of the defense. And now all of a sudden he's, you know, like you said, injured and not playing at all. And so you wonder and you worry, because there's still not a whole lot of information coming out on when he'll be back and when he'll be healthy. And like you said, the difference is Rucker's been there, done that for a long time. This is all new to Justin Bethel. Let's get things moving, dude.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I mean, you don't want him to, obviously, with a foot injury, and as rough as this can be, foot injuries linger. I mean, it sounds like when they're talking about Andre Ellington being healthy, is that even though he came back from the foot injury happened in 2014, it sort of looked like the way they're talking is that foot injury affected him all last season as well, and probably contributed to some of the other injuries he had. Which is why he's running differently this camp. So you have to wonder, oh, they paid Bethel a whole lot of money. He's shown a lot of promise. But now he's injured and coming off a broken foot surgery. So is he even going to be close to what he was? I mean, even on special teams, if he's going to be hampered at all with that foot all season, that's an interesting turn of events for a player who was seen to have a ton of promise, a guy that Bruce Arians, I don't know if it was just Arians' hyperbole, but saying that he's got the potential, he's potentially more talented than Patrick Peterson as a cover guy.
All right, and it usually is hyperbole with Coach Arians, but it's also there's also some truth about his, you know, athleticism. He was a freak athlete coming out of, I think it was Presbyterian, right?
Yeah,
so, you know, like I said, it's just disappointing. Like, you don't really know what to think. You don't know what to expect, because we have no idea when he's going to be back. And that's the hard part, because there's so much uncertainty with him and his health and then his ability. So there's just question marks. You know, and you just want to see him healthy and getting, you know, started. The other thing that was interesting that us but didn't come out is Kim Dice is still not there yet. But they said he should be back next week. So maybe he'll be ready for a light work in preseason game 3.
I don't. If he's just scrimming back, I hope he can get a few reps for that one. I envision he will get a ton of work in preseason game 4, because they really like the young guys getting reps. But yeah, I mean, the tough thing with him is it's the high ankle sprain, and those just might be the trickiest injuries of all the injuries you could have, because you just can't do anything. I mean, Rucker tried to play through it some last year, and as you noted from the all or nothing, he's like, yeah, I'm good, I'll be back, and then he's like, I hope so. And then he's, you know, he's still coming back from the same injury, that granted it was surgery, so that's, you know, that's, thank goodness for a deep defensive line is all I got to say. And we get to see a little more interesting to see Rodney Gunter. In fact, I'm actually – you see Rodney Gunter there on the depth chart, but he doesn't play in that spot that he's listed as a starter right now. It's been Ed Stinson.
And he played into, like, the fourth quarter, didn't he? It seemed like it, at least. Like, oh, what's going on? But, yeah, I mean, you just – you want to see these guys start to get healthy. That's really all there is to it, because we're now – to the point where none of them are going to play preseason game two. And we honestly have no information on whether they're going to play preseason game three. Like you said, the young guys, Bethel and Kim DJ, reps in game four. We know Tyrann Mathieu's not going to
get any reps. It would be silly to put Rucker out.
And yeah, Rucker, exactly. Like at that point, you just leave him be, right? Like, right. Eh, whatever, it is what it is. But so now, yeah, that's kind of what you're waiting on. Is the only two that I don't want to say matter, but that you really would like to see start getting some reps are Justin Bethel and Robert Kimbiche. Everybody else is, I mean, you know what they bring and you know what they can do.
Exactly. And, you know, luckily, I mean, we're going to talk about this, but the talent around them, where it seems like, you know, Brandon Williams, the talk has been Brandon Williams, but obviously he's raw. But hopefully there's just enough, there is enough talent, and they can scheme around perhaps the absence of experience there at a cornerback. And, you know, I'm just glad that they're off, because that's, I'm glad that they're off PUP, because that's at least
a step forward.
Is a step in the right direction. It's a step in the right direction. So we know, okay, they're on track at least. They can start actually doing something as opposed to nothing at all. So let's just kind of move on from that. So let's kind of rewind. So we've talked about Arians. We've talked about the PUP list and kind of the players coming off that. So they kind of have a full slate of players now that they can have participate at least in team drills and walkthroughs. But coming up next on Rise Up See Red, we're going to talk about the preseason opener, the good, the bad, the ugly, which, you know, Bruce Arians almost wrapped up all into one just in Matt Barkley. But we're gonna talk about what happened in that preseason game. Was there anything worth taking away from that? So that's next up on Rise Up See Red. We're back on Rise Up See Red, and we're going to talk about the preseason opener, a 31-10 loss. I think I've reached a point in my adult life in watching football that the only thing I care about in terms of the team are two. One, health, which they passed, and two, that the first teams look good, which, check that one off, they did.
Yeah, and that's Cardinals especially returning so much outside of the questions about Brandon Williams. I mean, there was really nothing to see. And let's be honest. I mean, Brandon Williams on that first team, if Derek Carr throws that ball correctly, that's probably a touchdown that third down play. But you have to take those plays for what they are. And it was a victory. Yeah, he was beat, but it didn't matter.
They got off the field. They got off the field.
And, you know, that's where I differ from so many people in my quote-unquote analysis of football. I don't like almost plays or plays that could have happened because, you know, the other person on the other side of the field is getting paid as well. You know, so if a quarterback, you know, for instance, Carson Palmer, almost throws an interception, but the
he doesn't.
You know, the defensive back drops it, and then he comes back and throws a touchdown. Well, am I not supposed to count the touchdown because he should have thrown an interception the pass before? No, the dude that gets paid, you know, $8 million a year should have made the interception. Carson Palmer gets paid $21 million a year to forget that he almost threw an interception and then go throw a touchdown. So that's where I, so many people in my analysis, and it was similar in the game. Yeah, he got beat. I mean, he did. He got beat. But it was a combination of, you know, of the fact that he has good makeup speed, he's pretty long, that forced Derek Carr to make that, you know, throw a little wider than he wanted to. It probably helped that it was the first preseason game.
Right.
And they were, you know, the first time going against a real live rush where somebody can actually hit you, but you have to, you know, count that as a success. You know, I understand it wasn't, but I, you know, I still look at it and go, they got off the field. So tell me about how they almost didn't get off the field, and I'll tell you about how the Cardinals then went down and kicked a field goal. And so they, in real life, were up 3-0 instead of being down 7-0.
Right. And, you know, one of the takeaways for me was actually, wow, Derek Carr, you remember the, kind of the accuracy. He has a little bit of accuracy issues when kind of a scouting report coming out. And we saw that because on those sideline passes, I think two, three, maybe four times, if he makes a good sideline throw, he's got a completion down the field or at least a chance at a completion. He just kept throwing them wide.
Right, I mean, and but, you have to remember that the first game they play is against Jimmy Garoppolo. So it's not like they're facing Tom Brady.
No.
You know, you take this away as, man, I'm concerned because they're playing Tom Brady in the first round. Oh, wait, they're not. So it's okay. We're going to, you know, we're going to be okay there. You know, it's just, it's one of those situations that I don't, you know, agree with everybody else and how they grade. So I, you know, I take what actually happens on the field instead of what might have happened. And, you know, we move from there.
Defensively, there was, I mean, defensively, it wasn't great. I mean, obviously,
they went after Brandon Williams. No, after the first team, it got ugly, maybe, even.
Well, and it was, and I guess Arians described it that well, at least. Now, I was thinking more of the first team, but overall, the defense looked, there was good individual performances, but they did not play well as a unit. And Arians said that there was lots of problems in playing in their gaps. And so a lot of stuff happened because people were just simply not sticking to scheme. But you saw some positive individually, but as a unit, they were, I mean, yeah. When you give up, you know, a total of 97 yards in 5 carries and 83 of them or so came in 2 carries, that's never, ever a good thing. But I was thinking, you know, I wasn't super impressed by the first team defense. They just did okay because I didn't get a sense that they were completely dominating the line of scrimmage, that they were getting Derek Carr. And it's not like we saw fantastic coverage down the field from Williams. So as a unit, they did okay. I was really impressed by the offense because from the offense, what we saw, other than the stall inside the 5, we saw they picked up where they left off because they had a first down completion. They got a third down completion. They had the big run play. They had the big pass play. And it, you know, they had the touchdown. You know, they don't get called for holding. It really looked like, hey, the offenses, they're in good shape. They're right where they were last year.
Yeah, and I thought that the first team offense, especially David Johnson, showed that he's progressed from last year. You saw, you know, everybody, and, you know, you and I both posted a video of it on our respective sites about his, you know, shaking whoever that cornerback was. I can't remember his name now. On that outside kind of stretch play where he got ISO'd on the corner and he just made one move and he was gone. You know, the run prior to that for 8 yards was so much more impressive to me because it showed that he is learning to be patient and waiting for his blocks to open up and then using that dynamic speed to, you know, go downfield and make a play. Whereas, you know, the last year where he struggled was when the hole wasn't there right away, he hesitated, you know, and that's a rookie. That's fine. There's not a big deal about that. But he hesitated and then would, you know, would kind of dance and then gain 3 or 4 yards. Whereas this play, you know, it was a zone run and he ended up taking it outside almost. And he waited for the hole to open up and exploded through for 8 yards. And that's, you know, that's just what you want to see in terms of growth for a young player, especially a young running back. And then we haven't even mentioned the fact that he had 2 excellent pass block. The first one when Darren Fells was left alone on Khalil Mack. And somebody asked me about that. I think it was one of two things. Either one, DJ didn't get the call, or two, it's the preseason, and I know that they don't necessarily scheme for guys. They just go out there and run their plays. And I think, knowing Arians' offense, that's an Arians' offense play. Like, they leave that tight end. They say, you know, do your job on the defensive end, or in this case, you know, the outside backer, the edge player. Say, do your job and show us that you can win one-on-one when it's a play-action pass. It just happened to be the, you know, second best defensive player in the NFL that you had to do that against. So, you know, it's a little, maybe you can blame, you know, if it was DJ, then it was DJ's fault. If it was called that way, maybe you blame Arians and Goodwin, but in the end, again, it was another almost play. So it didn't matter because the Cardinals got a 30-yard pass play out of it.
Which was, if you look down the field, now granted, yeah, it was an almost play, but you see, that's what Arians' offense is. I mean, that's exactly what it is. Is they're trying to stretch you down the field, and that, my goodness, Michael Floyd was wide open, and that's you know, you showed, you know, when Arians first joined the Cardinals, you kind of showed some of the scheming that he does with his pass routes and just how hard it is to cut, especially with the talent they have. It's how hard it is to cover all those routes. Is there's going to be someone open. In this case, it was in the middle of the field with a really big target at Michael Floyd. Yeah, and it was the one thing that you wish that you could have seen is you wish that John Brown were out there to see, okay, instead of having J.J. Nelson out there, how differently does it look with John Brown? Which in itself is a little bit concerning. I know they're not talking like it's a concern at all. You know, just from what I've seen, the other, you know, Drew Stanton went through the concussions protocol, and we've seen a couple other players go, he's taking a long time to get through this. And it didn't seem to, you know, for something that, I guess it was more serious a head injury than what you initially thought it was. But you always worry about those head injuries. And it's just, you know, did he turn into Kevin Cobb? We saw, you know, just, you know, Arizona State a couple of years ago, Stephen Three. He left the game, and the thing is that when he left the game, you don't remember any play where he got his bell rung. He just came out of the game, and then Brock Osweiler, you know, the rest is history in terms of ASU football and Brock Osweiler. But Stephen Threet, it was seemed something benign. He left the game. He never played again and ended up retiring from football as a collegiate player.
Yeah, and you do worry about concussions, especially in today's NFL. And that's not, you know, I'm not saying that in a bad way. Like, that's a good thing because they're much more concerned about the long-term effects, so they're going to take their time. And you know, that's like, I like John Brown in person than I do as a player, so I'm gonna be fine with him taking his time getting back. And then, you know, if he can come back, if he can't, that's a tough loss. Or if it's, you know, a couple more weeks and stuff, that's difficult, but You want what's best for these guys in the long term.
That's true. So let's turn from the let's turn our attention to the two players. Pretty much everyone in the Cardinals universe and the Cardinals, you know, the Red Sea, has been looking forward to, and that was the play of DJ Humphries and Brandon Williams. We saw a mixed bag early with DJ Humphries. And he explained kind of what happened, and he gets too amped up, and so he will overplay, which left the inside move exposed. But he also showed, especially in the run game, very nice ability. And so in terms of run blocking, they might have themselves a really, really good run blocking line. Because we know Valdir is great. We know Mike Iupati, that's his reputation. Shipley's better as a run blocker. You know, Mathis has a reputation of being one of the top run blocking guards. And he had DJ Humphries. My goodness, do we actually have a dominant run blocking line across the line with no liabilities in the run game like you had before with a Paul Fenike or a Ted Larson that were, you know, at best adequate?
Exactly. I think you have that now. And we saw DJ Humphries miss at least one pass set, maybe two. And, you know, and you're okay with that because you know that he's learning, and the hardest part is learning on the job, especially on the job against Khalil Mack.
Right.
So You know, I took issue with a couple people's articles that he struggled. I really did, because I feel like the expectations DJ Humphries are really unrealistic in the fact that, you know, the question is, can he be as good as Bobby Massey? It's not, can he be
right
all pro right now? And no. That's what I and that, that's all what he's got to
be is average, because the Cardinals did really well with, you know, most of the time an average, slightly above average, who plays sometimes below average guy in Bobby Massey. If he can be Bobby Massey this year, and it looks like, at least in run blocking, he's already better than Massey, that he's already an upgrade. So, you know, he played fine. I mean, how many times did Bobby Massey miss a pass blocking set a game? There was a couple of times every single game he did.
And that's the thing that people, you know, it's one of those weird things.
We're all like, experts now. We're all experts.
Well, right. And so that's why I, you know, asked the question. I'm like, does anybody know what the call was on the Mac play where Fells got beat? Was the play supposed to be, was Humphries supposed to go out? Because I don't think anybody knows that, and they're kind of putting that on him, right? Like, they're saying, oh, this was his fault, blah, blah. So, I don't know. Brandon Williams, here's what I liked about him, because he did really struggle, I thought at least. I don't know what you thought. But I like the fact that he continued to compete and got better as the game went along. The touchdown pass he gave up, you just ends up. I mean, if Matt McGloin's going to throw that pass, whatever. Like, but the one to Andre Holmes, like, there's nothing you can do about that.
Right. You know, he could have defended that better. So, but
he could have.
It's not like he wasn't bad in coverage, though. It's not like he got beat in coverage. He just got turned the wrong way. He didn't play it right.
Right, and so here's the thing, and this is, you know, this is what people need to understand about Brandon Williams, right? So he's played 500 and some odd snaps at cornerback in college. Now he is, you know, tasked with playing opposite the best corner in the NFL. All right, so good luck, buddy. Right, like, you're gonna see literally 200 targets.
You're gonna see all the passes.
Yeah, so you're going to get 200 targets. Here's where he struggles. Oh, he struggles doing the finer points of playing quarterback. This is shocking when the guy has never played cornerback before. You know, like, he missed his jam. I've seen him practice a number of times. He struggles with jams. That's just something that's going to take time. He's going to have to learn to do it consistently and, you know, do it properly. Then you look at it, he struggles locating the ball. Well, I remember a guy coming out of LSU that had similar issues locating the baseball when he got, you know, and he was the fifth overall pick. And he got penalized a ton because he kept his hands on players down the field instead of turning and finding the ball. It takes time. Like, was he bad? Yes, absolutely. But he was bad with technical issues that can be fixed. He was not bad in terms of positioning, in terms of footwork, things of that nature. He missed his press in coverage a couple times, and he doesn't locate the ball. Those are things he's going to have to learn to do. And those are things that are he's not going to learn to do them in practice when he cheats. And that just happens. That happens in practice. You play the same guys for, you know, 15 straight days, you know exactly what they're going to run. You know the routes, you know the steps, and all of a sudden you start to hedge and you start to cheat. And guess what? You go out against the Oakland Raiders, who have two fantastic route running wide receivers, and you're going to get your lunch eaten. And he did. And then, you know, all accounts today was he got his lunch eaten by Keenan Allen, one of the best route runners in the NFL. Guess what? That's good. That's what needs to happen. It's the preseason. It's going to happen. It needs to happen right now, because that's the only way he's going to learn to get better.
Right. And what is also encouraging is that, where did he struggle against? He struggled against the very best receivers as he played later on with the lesser receiver. Yes, he got, you know, He got beat on the touchdown to Holmes, but again, he didn't have bad coverage in that play. But he looked better when he was playing against lesser competition. And not every team has two top-end receivers. Patrick Peterson's going to take one of them. I mean, you look at the Patriots, for example. One, they're going to have Jimmy Garoppolo. Their receivers aren't, you know, Juliet, you know, Edelman, that's one thing. But they have kind of a hodgepodge of pretty good receivers that put up elite numbers is kind of how they do things. And then now when we see Tampa Bay, when we get some size out there, that's going to be fun to see. But, I mean, he's not going to be covering the best receivers every time. That's going to be Patrick. So he's going to get a lesser receiver most of the time.
Right, and so he's going to get the number two receiver, and he's going to end up with, I mean, you look at it early, he's not going to have to con Martellus Bennett too much in the first game. If they do, it could be a long day. I mean, that's just the reality of it. He's not going to get, you know, game two, it's going to be interesting because they have Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson, plus Austin Seferian-Jenkins, who's a nice up-and-coming tight end. So that's going to be a little bit more of a challenge in terms of corner or wide receivers. But overall, I mean, again, you just continue to see those guys coming up, and it's going to be a progression on talent, and we're going to get to see Gage where he's coming along, how he's coming along, and if he's getting better, because that's the only way we can tell, you know, if he's making strides as a player.
Moving along to kind of beyond the Brandon Williams and DJ Humphries, those are the two players pretty much everyone was had their eyes on. Andre Ellington really flashed, and there's some buzz about Andre Ellington that we haven't heard since previous to the 2014 season, when he was going to get the ball, when he's going to touch the ball 25, 30 times. I think we should just expect what's happening with Ellington, and as long as he stays healthy, if he's healthy, he's going to be dynamic. The question is, can he stay healthy? Because as we saw last year, as soon as Chris Johnson went down, what was it, two plays later, Ellington went down? It's like, all right, time for Andre. First carry, oh, he got hurt. So Andre is exciting. And although he didn't look good as a kick return, I'll be perfectly honest, he did not look good. The special teams, they look dreadful on the return game overall.
Oh, do we have to talk about special teams? I thought they drafted all those guys for this reason.
That's the thing, you know, especially when I've always found it fascinating that they talk about, because they have some really solid special teams. Stephon Taylor, they talk about how good he is in special teams. Justin Bethel, three-time Pro Bowler. Jerron Brown, great. They talk about how good he is in special teams and Britton Golden. But yet they've got, as a special teams unit, they're just bad. They were bad last year. And it doesn't help that they're giving up plays, and they don't make plays in the return game either. And I think that's where that's more glaring. You would give up a little bit. You'd be a little more forgiving if it wasn't bad on every single part. So they're not doing well in punt returns. I like the idea of Andre Ellington as a kickoff returner, but the couple of runs that he had, it looked like Ted Ginn out there, and Ted Ginn was terrible. Like, what are you doing? If they're going to give you the 25-yard line, and if you're going to get the ball in the end zone, just take a knee. Now, apparently the NFL is waking up to this, and they're going to see more balls kicked, you know, inside the five. But, you know, between Kerwin Williams and J.J. Nelson, and you'd hope you'd get more production, but when it comes to kick return, yuck. And, you know, as much as Andre Ellington might be really dynamic for it, I don't know how good he'll be at it at this level, because you have to be able to be patient enough and then turn something, take the smallest amount of space when we know he does really well when he's in space, but can he create the space or see the moment, see the hold to turn that into space?
Yeah, and the whole thing with Ellington, and you hit it a little earlier, is he's in a role for the first time that is suited to him. I mean, he was his first year too, so. But you look at what he was last year and, you know, or 2 years ago, sorry. And, I was guilty of this. I don't know how guilty you were of it, but I definitely was guilty of it. I thought he could be an every down back, and he's not. And he's a very talented, you don't even want to say gadget player, because he can do everything David Johnson can do. He just does it in minimalist versions, right? Like you don't want him carrying the ball 25 times. You don't
he's
want
a
him catching the ball.
He's a high-performance vehicle. He's a high-performance vehicle that needs to be tuned up a lot. It has to be fixed up a ton.
Exactly. And
he's a Jaguar of luxury cars.
And you just look at it. No, you're fine. And you just look at it and you say, look, this is who he is. There's nothing wrong with this. And you want him to be successful in this role, and I'm okay with it. I think having him as your, quote unquote, third down back that handles certain situations and you play matchups, I think you are going to figure out that he is an electric weapon in specific moments, and that is all you want from this guy in his contract year. Because the other thing it does is then, and this is odd to explain and maybe not the best time to do it, but then it gives the Cardinals leverage in contract negotiations if they want to re-sign him, with the fact that you are fantastic in a role in Arizona. Can you go to what other team will replicate that role for you, and who's going to ensure that you have that success? And that's the question. And that's what I've seen so far. And so I think you have to be excited.
And moving on to kind of some of the other players as we move down the depth chart, some. Bruce Arians, for one, praised Troy Nicholas, who looked like an NFL tight end, finally. He praised Marquis Christian, who flashed and also bombed. He flashed and also splashed. And Carriel Brooks, he also mentioned. One of the more interesting comments came from Steve Keim afterwards on the Monday morning after the fact. And he also praised Cole Toner, who got a lot of reps. He and Evan Bain got a ton of reps because they were running both the second and third team. Toner running with the second team because of the injury to Watford and also to Taylor Boggs. So he was in there a lot. And the interesting comment from Keim is the fact that, he doesn't look good out on the field. Like, it's not pretty when he's out there, but it's effective. So he's not strong enough. He doesn't have great technique, but somehow he gets the job done kind of player. But does that remind you of some player that, we recently saw leave to a rival?
So, but you and I kind of joked that he was the new Bradley Saal. Like, that's we joked about that. Maybe, I don't know. This offensive line is just a disaster to try to predict. The offensive line and secondary are just and the defensive line. there are just so many positions where you're like, I have no idea. Like, you literally just toss up your hands. And it's not that you don't like these guys or that you don't think they're going to be good or this one's like. It's just one of those situations where you're like, I don't know. I just don't know who's going to get those last spots, because there's so many interesting people. I wrote about Antoine McLean. You and I have talked about Antoine McLean. Is he going to be able to hold off Cole Toner, who's now getting all these, you know, you know, it's just, that's what it is. That's, those are the questions.
Hey, well, you know, he's been, that's a guy who's been cut by five teams. He's burned through a whole bunch of teams that's still sticking around. Yeah, that's going to be real interesting. That, I know the Troy Nicholas play was really good to see. We knew, and I think we kind of expected, perhaps a lot of people expected too much. Perhaps I think I did expect too much out of him because he was still fairly new to the position. And so now we're seeing, okay, we're starting to see flashes. What he needs to do this year, especially when they got Gresham and Fels ahead of him, both who will be free agents after this year. If he can show over the course of the year consistently that he's improved, then he'll be in a position to kind of take over and be the starter and be the full-time tight end guy in year four, which, you know, I think that's what you want to see out of him, especially because they do have depth at the position between Gresham and Fels, who, you know, and the whole Gresham thing, it looks like, once again, that actually Darren Fels is just ahead of Gresham on the depth chart, which is surprising.
Yeah, but maybe not. I mean, the thing is with this tight end room in general, I think you kind of just hit it on the head. They're going to let Fels and Gresham play their way out of the position and Nicholas and Momo play. And they know going into 2017, all right, well, we got Nicholas and Momo ready to go. Like, if we re-sign Darren Fels or Jermaine Gresham, fantastic. But we have our whoever it is, and Momo and Nicholas for 2017. So we don't need to worry about it. And that's what not good teams, that's what great teams do, because then there's, you know, you hate to say this, but there's not a drop-off in production at, what's the word I'm looking for, to put it politely, you know, not impactful positions on the Arizona Cardinals. So,
right. Not to disrespect the tight end position, but in Arian's offense, it's a non-statistical position.
He has revamped the offense from the Heath Miller, Kobe Fleener, Dwayne Allen offense in Pittsburgh and Indy to now it's like, well, I have Larry Fitzgerald. I have, you know, I have four wide receivers.
Remember, what have I said? Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, he's a glorified tight end at this point.
He's a glorified tight end who puts up great numbers.
Yeah, so I mean, you look at it like, let's be honest. Fitz, Floyd, John Brown, David Johnson, and then you're probably taking Andre Ellington fifth, right? The fifth guy that you want getting touches before you even get to the tight ends.
Right.
So, there's only one football. And so that's the difference in this, you know, whole thing. So anyways, yeah, I like what's happening. I'm glad to be wrong. Troy Nicholas, because I thought he was going to get cut. I honestly did. Like, I am glad to see that he not only is put up, but he is progressed in the right way, and he, you know, he looks like a guy that has finally realized that potential of being a very good player in the NFL.
Now, the player that, you know, kind of was another one of the points of emphasis for everyone watching the game, and that is the really bad play of Matt Barkley. And combined with that, kind of some disappointing play from some receivers we thought would be in the mix for that number six spot. I thought Chris Hubbard didn't play as well as we had hoped, and likely, and also Jackson Shipley, a couple of guys who, you know, they weren't able to hold on to passes where they should have. But that Barkley, my goodness, it was just a whole bunch of what in the world. We saw a couple, and he had two or three that were absolutely fantastic throws, but one of those throws was simply that throw down the middle of the field to Momo that he dropped. That was a throw he never actually should have made based on the situation. That was a, oh crap, I'm just going to throw the ball because I see a window just barely open. He had issues with his feet. There were a couple times I saw him sail a throw because he was worried about his feet, so he was, you know, he was feeling pressure. So he wasn't able – so he came off his back foot to throw the ball. I saw a couple pretty throws and then some throws that were just inexplicably off target. So 8 of 24, an interception. It was mostly a bunch of yuck. And if there was a bubble he was on, I don't know if there's a thing he can do the rest of the way to say – There's no way he can be on this roster, especially with the talent that they have and the talent they're going to have to cut to keep a third quarterback. Anyway, in the roster, I know Burns and Gambo has said neither one of those quarterbacks will even be on the practice squad.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about because it's just so ad nauseum with this and the fact that. He's the same guy. He's the same guy
who didn't look good
that got drafted in the fourth round, who flamed out in Philly, who, you know, in a much more quarterback-friendly offense. I just don't know. And more concerning than the athletic stuff was what Bruce Arians said after the game.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
That
and the fact that he didn't even know to send his receivers in motion.
He didn't send receivers in motion. He didn't get line calls made. I mean, that stuff is just elementary, right? That's just – and right. That's what he says. He's got the, you know, GD wristband on. I don't understand how he misses that. And that's the reality. How do you – I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to lament it too much because the physical stuff is something that we've talked about since – the 2012 draft.
Right.
I've literally had this, I've written about it on Arizona Sports when I was writing for them. I've talked about it on all the podcasts I do. I reposted it when the Cardinals traded for Barkley. He's the same player physically. I don't know what that means in terms of his NFL skill set outside of, I think he could probably be a nice backup in a West Coast run offense. I just don't see a guy that you want as your, quote-unquote quarterback of the future. And I don't see a guy that fits what Arians does pushing the ball down the field. The mental stuff is just a whole nother ball of wax that we weren't – or that he wasn't supposed to have an issue with.
Well, and, even the one thing that we know about Ryan Lindley, who was, I love Ryan Lindley, but dadgummit, he let me down so many times. He was terrible. He was a fantastic practice quarterback. Fantastic. Because, if we go back to his rookie year, why did Ryan Lindley get a start? Because he showed enough in practice to say, hey, there might be something here. So we played him. Wisenhunt gets fired. Bruce Arians comes to town. Who's the one quarterback they keep around? They keep around Ryan Lindley. Then they brought him back. So he's smart. At least in terms of protections and schemes and the offense, he knew how to do it, and he was great in the classroom. He was great in practice. It just didn't translate on the field. And that's
he was just a scattershot.
He just was, yeah. But that's the thing. For your third quarterback, if you're going to have a third quarterback, it should be, you want a promising young player that you can develop. And they don't have that. I mean, there's nothing about Matt Barkley that tells you he's promising or even promising enough to say, okay, Drew Stanton, we're going to let you go after this year, even though we signed you for 2 years.
Exactly. And I think, we talked about this last week a little bit. I think the goal is now they have Stanton, win with Stanton. I'm writing about this for now Thursday, but that's what anybody that's on the Matt Barkley side of things doesn't understand. Your competition is not Drew Stanton in camp right now, the 2-for-6 interception Drew Stanton. Your competition, or Matt Barkley's competition, is going against 2014 Drew Stanton. What Bruce Arians has seen from him in the NFL. Why would he cut bait on something he has as a known quantity for somebody that's never performed well in any singular game that he's ever played in the NFL? And so that's where the question comes in.
That's probably enough about Matt Barkley. That's really sort of. I mean, was there anyone else that stood out to you? Either way, I mean, I think that, you know, Pro Football Focus loved what Evan Bame did. I think that really was a good showcase for him to kind of show, okay, there is promise there. Other than that, I wasn't particularly impressed with really any, and a couple of players who didn't. One player I would hope would pop that I didn't really see pop was Rodney Gunter. So that was a little disappointing because you wanted to see Gunter take the next step, and playing against the second and third stringers, you would hope that he would really flash out there on the field. And I didn't think, aside from a Matthias Farley, you know, Marky Christian, that you really didn't see much defensively, at least. There was nothing really to get excited about in the same offensively. You know, you saw a little bit of Elijah Penny. I'm not worried about him. You're going to see Elijah Penny get 25, 30 carries in the preseason finale, and then they're going to say,
good luck.
thanks for all the carries.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel bad for Kerwin Williams because he's been such a reliable player for them. And, you know, we talked about it earlier, but what's going on, you know, with Stephon Taylor? I just don't think he gets a chance to beat out Stephon Taylor. That's just me, though.
Nope. And I keep saying that. I thought maybe Taylor was done a year or two ago. He does too many things well. No, he's not a fantastic runner, but how, with the running back room that we've got, that the Cardinals have, when do you need Stephon Taylor carrying the ball? Let's be honest. You don't. You don't at all. You need a guy as your fourth running back who can catch the ball, who can pass block, who can play special teams. And guess what? That's what Steph Taylor does better than anyone on their team. He's a better pass blocker than anyone they got in the room. He is one of the most reliable receivers of the running back room. He's not Andre Ellington. He's not David Johnson, but he's super reliable. And as a special teams player, he's one of the leaders out there. So yeah, Steph Taylor for one more year until they find a guy to replace Steph Taylor. Who's like Steph Taylor.
Exactly. So, and you know what? Steph Taylor might be the guy that already signed because he's not going to be expensive. So,
yep, probably not. You're right.
So, there, you know, there's that too. No, you know, I thought Marquis Christian had some nice plays. He struggles coming. He struggles on angles. The angles are so much faster in the NFL. I mean, that's a given. But you just saw that he struggles on anything where he has to take an angle. The other thing is, you know, a guy like Matthias Farley understands the game, whereas a guy like Marquis Christian is still learning how to play the game. Christian has more talent within his physical body, but Matthias Farley just understands time, space, and where to be to make a play, where it just doesn't seem like Marquis Christian gets that yet. But I just don't see any way they cut Marquis Christian. I mean, I
no,
just don't.
No. They really like him, and the potential he has on special teams is also really, really good. Let's kind of move on from that. I mean, we're now talking about the back of the roster guys that, you know, I put out another 50. Yeah, I put out another 53-man projection. I kind of changed things. I said there, you know, I saw them going with, I don't know, who are my extra guys? I saw them keeping Harlan Miller and Marquis Christian. I had them going with only two real inside linebackers, but, you know, so, you know, it kind of changed. And I'll probably do that after every game based on the plays. What perhaps does this team look like? But let's kind of look ahead to – so let's move on from preseason game one and look ahead to preseason game two, another – somewhat, it's kind of the sort of idea that you have. So let's come back on Rise Up Sea Red and talk a little bit about what we want to see looking against San Diego, if there's anything. Back on Rise Up Sea Red for our final segment, we're going to talk about the upcoming game in San Diego against the Chargers in preseason game two. The starters are going to get a few more reps. The plan is, what, 15, 16 reps with DJ Humphreys and Brandon Williams playing the entire first quarter. Other than that, then it's back to, what do you want to see? What do I want to see? I want to see the first team play well. And then after that, I want to see who plays well individually. Because outside of what the first team unit does, I don't care because we're not going to see the second, third team units playing on the field in the regular season.
No, we're not. And so that's what, you know, makes these preseasons difficult, especially when you got guys that, you know, you brought him up earlier, but like a Rodney Gunter, and he was in there late. And like you said, he wasn't doing anything. You're like, what's going on? Like, you're going up against a bunch of, you know, guys
for
that are
lack of
be,
a better word. You know, the district of the, for lack of a better word, scrubs. Not that,
yeah.
These are all much better football players than I'll ever imagine to be in my life. But Rodney Gunter's listed as a starter on the depth chart right now.
Exactly. So, you know, it's just one of those things that's like, it's frustrating when you see that. I mean, obviously in this upcoming game, you're looking for steps from Brandon Williams, but he's got a tough task with Keenan Allen. I asked Bolts from the Blue, do you guys have a Bolts wire yet or a Chargers wire yet?
We do not have a Chargers wire yet. Nope. Maybe
okay,
someday
soon. Okay, I was just curious. But, yeah, so I asked, like, Bolts from the Blue because I don't pay enough – I mean, I don't have time to pay enough attention right now to, you know, where guys like Melvin Ingram rush from. Obviously, we don't have to worry about Joey Bosa. What a crap show that is, right? That used to be the Cardinals, man. Can you imagine that, like, if we did this podcast 10 years ago?
Oh, jeez. Well, yeah, and even remember, Jonathan Cooper did the same thing, but signed the first day of camp, and it was about the same offset language, exact same sign.
Yeah. So, but you know, I want to see where Melvin Ingram rushes from because he's their best pass rusher that's under contract, and I want to see how DJ Humphries holds up in that situation. Jeremiah Tachi is not bad. He's on my dynasty fantasy team and the defensive one that I play in. So, you know, if he wants to show out after this game, that'd be fine. But I just, you know, it's so hard because we're getting, what, 15 to 16 plays? And then we're getting not even a lot of the second team because most of the second team's up on the first team right now defensively. Offensively, it was a crap show. I mean, let's be honest. Like, outside of Andre Ellington, what were the highlights on offense last game? So you want to see at least some.
It was Troy Nicholas for two plays. That was it.
Yeah, it was. And so you just want to see consistency, right? Like, that's the only thing you can ask for in these settings and situations is some consistency from the second team, and that it would create less worry if, you know, knock on wood, something happened to a first teamer.
Right. You know, I want to see, like I mentioned, I want to see the first team play well. I want the team to stay healthy. And then most of, but I want to see players flash. It, for the back end of the roster, that's what we need to see. We need to see players flash. We need to, you know, every year the Cardinals have a couple of players that, you know, there's always a defensive back who, you know, who does something that someone gets excited. That might be Matthias Farley this year. There's always a receiver. This year it's Chris Huber, you know, before it was John Brown. We've seen guys like Steven Williams and LaRon Bird. And I remembered a couple of the other, you know, Max Komar, with the two Maxes, Max Hall and Max Komar, guys that, you know, they don't seem like
now
real
you're just
names.
Making up names.
Yeah, you're making up names. But I want to see players flash because, you know, if fans want to see that, fans want to start talking about the roster, who these diamonds in the rough are. And so I want to see that because that's always good for fans to see. It's good for the team to see. And it really promotes the team as its personnel department to see these players who may or may not come out of places that we know of to start performing on the field.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, the hard part is this. And I think you hit on it earlier, and I meant to say something, and we just kind of moved on. Too many people trying to make plays or show out or, you know, flash, then they end up losing their assignments. Tristan Akpalagu was a big one last game. Instead of just setting the edge or doing this or that in his assignment, he instead would, you know, rush the passer. He would get caught on his heels too much. And then what ends up happening, he is out of position to make a play. There was a time when he crashed down, Donald Butler filled the hole perfectly, and just Donald Butler just didn't make a tackle. You know, so, like, it's hard because you want those, like you said, you want those guys to flash, but if they're not playing within the defense, can you trust them? You know, like, what can you trust them? Because I think, especially for James Betcher after last year, I think he wants guys that are going to do their job and not guys that are going to try to make the big plays. I think they have those certain guys. They have Chandler Jones, Deion Buchanan, Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, that they trust to make those big plays. They need everybody else, Kevin Minter, you know, the other guys on the defensive line, to do their job so that those guys are the ones that can freelance. And then when, like, a guy like Tristan Akpalagu or a Marquis Christian or one of these guys is freelancing a little too much and it opens things up, then all of a sudden you have, well, then you have kind of what happened in the end of that game where you have just giant runs. And George Atkinson, the third, is unbelievably athletic and fast. And so Cardinals didn't have anybody out there that could keep up with him athletically once he hit top gear, you know, about 5 yards down the field. So, but yeah, I mean, I think you want to see Troy Nicholas build on what he did last game. You know, if we're going to single out players, I think Nicholas is one of the more important ones on offense because, like you said, this isn't necessarily for 2016 his importance. It's just it's for the future of the position. And then defensively, you know, the Chargers' offensive line's not great. I would like to see a little bit of pressure. You know, I'm not a big fan of pressure. I prefer sacks. But really even get pressure just rushing 4 against Oakland, who does have probably, like I said before, the second-best offensive line in the NFL behind the Cowboys. So, you know, you'd like to see Chandler Jones get close, Marcus Golden get close, you know, and start getting to that position.
And, you know, that's more or less what we want to see. But the more fun one will be the following week as they will end their last week of camp and they will play on national television. They'll be on NFL Network in the afternoon, Sunday afternoon in Houston. So that should bring us, that's wrap up another edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast where we talked the injury news, the Arians news as well. We talked about what our reactions to the first preseason game and we look ahead to preseason game 2. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. That's Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds. You can find the show on a number of spots on Blog Talk Radio, Rise Up Sea Red. You can find it on Facebook or on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. You can search either one of those. It's also features on my site, CardsWire.com, on Seth's site, RevengeTheBirds.com, and also locally at Sports360AZ.com. Oh, yeah. It's also on iTunes and other podcasting catching sites type of thing. So we're pretty much everywhere where you can find us. So thanks for listening so that you did find us. And if you know anyone who likes Cardinals, sure, pass the word along. But we'll wrap up the show. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening once again, and go Cardinals.